Welcome to Clinical Pills. My name is BJ Hamankuli. I'm joined with my co-host, Tracy White. Tracy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm awesome. So on today's Clinical Pearls, we will be diving into the intricacies of nursing leadership to even being a chief nursing officer. I was just curious, Tracy, what is your experience with nursing leadership?
Well, to be honest, and I would not, well, Dr. Egerton will hear this when he listens to the podcast, but jokingly, we always said that the nursing leaders were the clipboard nurses, you know, that came click-clacking down the hall with their clipboards.
Okay.
Now, what we've learned today, and no offense intended at all, because what we learned today is that their roles are obviously so much more important than that. And we've heard a wise man say that if you have a good nursing leader, they can make your lives wonderful. And if you don't, then it will be not a great place to work. So I'm happy to say that I have worked with some really great CNOs.
Yeah, me too. And I think they're an integral role. They play an integral role in the whole functioning of the entire hospital, to be honest with you, as we will learn on today's episode. So we hope that you guys tune in on today's episode of Clinical Pearls. And as always, we ask that you continue to follow and like us on whatever platform that you listen to podcasts.
Dr. Greg Egerton is an associate professor and specialty track coordinator for the Nursing and Health Systems Administration Program and as faculty and student advisor for the Executive DNP Program at the UAB School of Nursing. Prior to joining our faculty here, Dr. Egerton was a nurse and chief nursing officer for 31 years in the Veterans Health Administration before retiring in October of 2017. As chief nursing officer and interim chief executive officer in the Veterans Health Association hospitals, he led over 3,000 employees and the operations providing care for over 70,000 veterans. He served as a consultant at more than 20 VA facilities across the country, developed and led a national program responsible for mentoring all new COOs, CMOs, and CNOs. Dr. Egerton, thank you for joining us and telling us a little bit about your journey.
Thank you, and appreciate the invitation.
That's a lot of C's there.
I was going to say a lot of C's and O's.
There's a lot of C's there, that's for sure.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for your service. Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you became a chief nursing officer? What does it look like from a nurse to that role that's very important?
So as I explained to our students, it's a journey. You start at the beginning, like everybody else, and you kind of work your way towards your ultimate goal, whatever that is. For me, I started out as an ICU nurse, spent about 7 years as a critical care nurse in cardiac intensive care, medical intensive care. And of course, as a staff nurse, I got pulled to med surg, I got pulled to inpatient surgery, outpatient, wherever I was needed. And I shared that because I think it was important to kind of having a firm foundation in clinical bedside nursing, so that as I went down my leadership journey, I could sort of relate back to what my decisions or how my decisions could impact my frontline staff. So about 5 or 6 years into my clinical practice, I was serving as charge nurse on evening shift for the most part, but would get pulled into other roles along the way. And it kind of piqued my interest in this leadership thing I'd heard about all my career, but never really had thought about it that much. I went back to graduate school, was working on my master's degree in nursing when the position of evening shift house supervisor opened. And I thought, well, you know what, I'll give it a try. So I jumped up there, applied, and was actually selected, and spent about 4 or 5 years as the house supervisor while I was finishing my master's in nursing administration. It was probably one of my favorite roles because I was there during the evening, sort of the senior leader on for the hospital at night, got involved in all kinds of clinical situations, administrative situations, operations, all kinds of emergencies. There was so much about that job that it sort of solidified my thoughts about, hey, you know, what if I do this? Maybe I could be a chief nursing officer one day. So I really got self-engaged, if you will, in building my career. If there was a committee, I tried to be on it. If there was a task force, I tried to be on it. If there were just special projects, I wanted to lead those. And so I got engaged that way. And it was kind of a stair step out of the house supervisor role. I became an associate chief nursing officer at in Cleveland, Ohio. So in the VA, you kind of moved around to go into these higher level positions. So I spent about 5 years as an associate chief nursing officer, and I wanted to expand my experience at that level. So then I took a position in Richmond, Virginia, at the VA there as associate chief nursing officer. In 2001, I actually came back home to where I had started as a new grad in 1985 and came back to Birmingham as the chief nursing officer, where I spent about 12 years.
Wonderful.
And then I got recruited to the Durham VA Medical Center in Durham, North Carolina, where I spent about 5 years as chief nursing officer and CEO at different intervals during that. So it was a journey. It was a step-by-step, thoughtful process on my part and planning and being willing to step out there and do the things that needed to be done to get to my ultimate goal.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing that you just thought, well, yeah, I'll just try this night shift manager spot. And I'm just wondering what you were thinking the first few nights that you were on that shift. And because I don't suppose you had very much prep for a lot of these situations that you were dealing with.
You know, you learn as you go in nursing.
Yes, definitely.
So I could handle patient emergencies because that's what I had done, but administrative experience, charge nurse, but a lot of that was bed management and dealing with staffing and those sorts of things, which again, I go back and say that was a foundation building experience for me. What did I think those first few days or weeks? I actually stopped a few times and thought, what the heck was I thinking when I signed up for this? And I was double challenged in a way because I went from peers on evening shift to being their supervisor the following That's week. Rough. And so that created unique challenges in making sure that I understood my role and then help them understand my role. And how we could continue to have a relationship, but that it was going to be different. So I think the transition was more in terms of how to manage the people that you were working with side by side the week before. So there were a few moments I was going, what the heck was I thinking? And then there were certainly the moments where I went, yeah, I really like this.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. So, you know, I'm sure there's nurses out there that are listening to us and are like you know, want to jump into that leadership role. What are some of the skills that they should be kind of fine-tuning to make a good leader and eventually a chief nursing officer?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer that by saying I actually believe, based on my experience, there's two different things I had to think about. One was leadership behaviors versus leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to speak, you know, first to the leadership behaviors. And I think one of the most important behaviors is being authentic and being who you are and allowing others around you to be who they are. And that regardless of the role that we were in, even though I was away from the bedside, I was helping staff at the bedside make decisions that impacted their patients, our patients, but it also impacted their own satisfaction with the role of nurse. So I think, you know, being an authentic leader and allowing others to be who they are is an essential leadership behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to establish relationships with staff differently than I had been as a staff nurse because, one, I was who I was. And I was always open about that and shared my thoughts about nursing practice, nursing ethics, organizational behavior. And that allowed a conversation between me and the staff. Now, the skills, I think, are a little different. As a chief nursing officer, there were many skills that I had to learn along the way that I may or may not have actually gotten in school. I've shared with leadership students, I spent as much time working with operations, engineering, finance. Most of those courses you don't get in nursing school.
Correct.
Actually, none of those courses do you get in. So how did I learn it? By doing it and by listening to others and surrounding myself with the right people at the right time to make the right decisions. And I had to be willing to jump out there and make decisions and to create change that was sometime a little bit risky. And most of the time they worked out, but some of the times they didn't. And I had to be okay with that. And I think allowing myself to be vulnerable to those things allowed my staff to be vulnerable and to talk about the things that we could do to make changes.
So you began first as that charge nurse, I believe you said, and then the night shift house supervisor. Is that the common path that most take in terms of elevating to eventually they're in the C-suite? Or are there other pathways?
So, you know, this is a question that comes up frequently. How do I get there?
Yeah.
And my response to most are everybody's journey's a little bit different. There is no real one path. Frequently, you will see charge nurse to an assistant nurse manager, to a nurse manager, to a director, to an assistant CNO, to a CNO. That's kind of the typical framework that you see in the typical progression. But sometimes that is not the case. So I've known and worked with chief nursing officers who worked from staff nurse to nurse practitioner and practiced as a provider, who later became interested and involved in leadership, who then kind of took a left turn and went into the leadership realm. So there's all kinds of approaches to doing this, and there is no one way. I do think that there are some things that we need to do to prepare ourselves, and that's through, you know, obtaining a BSN, obtaining a master's, obtaining a doctorate of some level, and preparing ourselves educationally. But how you progress through an organization, what looks right for me may not look right for you guys. It may be very different. So it's a wide open field with many ways to go along the path.
I have a couple questions that I hope I don't forget because they're different than what we prepped. But a couple things come to mind. The first, I think maybe we need to go back a couple steps and describe what a chief nursing officer does. What would your day-to-day be like?
You know, that was one of the things, Tracy, that I loved about the job. Every day that I went in, it was different. Overall, okay, from a foundational point of view, I was responsible, and this is defined by Joint Commission and other accrediting agencies, I was responsible for nursing practice wherever it existed in my organization.
Wow.
That's really broad. Okay, what does that mean? There were days I really wasn't sure what that meant. But I knew if there was a nurse in the building who was practicing nursing, I was ultimately responsible for what they did. Now, operationally, I felt like I was the representative, if you will, or the advocate for my staff. And I spent a lot of time in a lot of meetings. And my ultimate goal was to advocate for my staff, thus impacting patient care. And that was one of the things I had to really work through, the transition of not providing direct patient care, but impacting patient care through others. And that was really my role, was to create an environment where my staff could provide the best patient care they could offer, and that they also knew that they had my support, that they had my support in enhancing their own practice, but also they had my support when things happened. As you both know, organizations, healthcare is complex, and nurses deal with a lot of situations. they make a lot of decisions in the course of a day. Most of them are good decisions, but every now and then we make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And it's not intentional.
Right.
Things happen. So they needed to feel that support when things happened. And so I always tried to focus on understanding that my primary role was to advocate and support my staff.
So I know you. You're a great guy. You know, I can see you where, you know, you'd one day be all dressed up in your suit, Greg, sitting up there in your office. And then the next day, actually on the floor, you know, helping pass out meal trays. Because I've seen that in some of the CNOs that I've worked with do that. Is that something that you tell your students who are in your leadership classes that, you know, you may be wearing your suit one day and then the next day scrubs and helping out bedside there?
You know, the chief nursing officer needs to be able to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And there were days that passing out meal trays was the most important thing I could do. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I use that term broadly. It could have been anything. Mm-hmm. Now, I will also say nursing leadership is a specialty. Okay. Just as there are other specialties within nursing. And when you focus on one specialty, you kind of lose the skills of other specialties within the profession. So as I transitioned from the bedside, as I say, from the bedside to the boardroom, mm-hmm. my skills changed. So to go out onto a floor as a CNO and think that I could put an NG tube down or that I could start an IV or I could assist with the procedure with the provider in the same way that I had done as a staff nurse, what would have been a mistake. But I felt like my role was to be in the environment and to support my staff as they did their job and to provide them with the resources that they needed so that they could do their job to take care of our patients. Mm-hmm. So I was always, when I would go into a unit, I'd say, let me know what I can do, but also let's think about patient safety because I might not be the best person to do this.
Yeah.
And I hopefully created an environment and had many times they said, well, you do this, don't do this.
Yes.
And that created a fun conversation. But there were times I'd just sit and feed a patient. I will tell you, it was not necessarily to help the staff as much as it was to help me ground myself into what was important.
Mm-hmm.
And the satisfaction that I got as a CNO came differently than that as a staff nurse. You know, as staff nurses, we got that immediate feedback
mm-hmm.
from our patients. They would say, thank you. You've been a good nurse. I hope I have you tomorrow night when you come back. I didn't always get that as CNO.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to find it in other ways. And sometimes just going to sit down with a patient's family or a patient kind of grounded me back and kind of gave me that self-satisfaction on the spot.
Oh, yeah. That's great. You know, you mentioned earlier the behaviors are a little bit different than skills. And I would just love to hear your opinion on people aspiring to be leaders that maybe they're not sure maybe if they have that natural ability, or do you think it's a natural ability that we can develop in people? And how do you help your students with that?
You know, that could be a difficult situation, difficult answer. Do I think that we are born leaders? Well, I think that we are born with some personalities and some characteristics that can be developed into leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally think that, you know, at 5 years old, I was necessarily a born leader. But I do think I had, based on my relationships as I came up through elementary school and middle school and all, that I had behaviors that allowed me to lead others. And then I honed those skills through formal education, through mentoring, through coaching, through watching others. So I do think that some of us are born with personalities, with characteristics that open that door maybe a little easier than others. But I do think it takes a very targeted approach to honing the skills of leadership. So we may be born with some behaviors, and then we open ourselves to the skill set. So it can be, it's a mix.
Yeah. So you did mention, you know, advanced education like an MSN, DNP, or PhD. How important are those in terms of somebody who's interested in the leadership role, yeah. and what can each of those advanced degrees better equip that individual for that life in the C-suite?
So I think each level is, it certainly has provided me different insight to what I was doing as a leader. Mm-hmm. I graduated with a bachelor's degree in 1985, and I let myself kind of plant, if you will, as a staff nurse for a few years before I decided what path I was going to take next, because as nurses, we have a lot of options in terms of our master's and doctoral preparation. And so I was trying to figure that out. And then when this leadership thing kind of came around as, I think this is my future, then I really looked at what programs were there. And it's kind of ironic that I'm sort of leading the program here at the School of Nursing that I went through as a student in 1989 to 1991. I finished my master's in 91 with master's in nursing and health systems administration. And I think it was important because I learned more of the skill set in my master's program. Mm-hmm. You know, quality and safety, mm-hmm. Finance, HR, human resources, some of those skills that I was being exposed to some, but to understand kind of the underpinnings of yeah. all of this. And then I waited until the DNP option was out there, and then I looked for a program that had a leadership focus because I felt like that's what I needed. And, you know, I look back now, even before I retired from the CNO position, you know, a lot of us go into these courses of theory and philosophy and all, we're going, why are we reading this? But I look back now and I tell my students, you know, these things are actually, we use them. We might not always call them theory. One that I think about often is Lewin's change theory. Mm-hmm. As a leader, I was managing change every day. Mm-hmm. And that framework was real simple for me to think about. And it helped me think about where my staff were in the change process so that I knew better how to approach them. Had I not gone back to graduate school and really thought about that, wrote papers about that, all those things that we've done with our education, I think my approach would not have been as comprehensive and as easy for me and for staff as it was.
Yeah. Would you encourage people who are maybe have taken a different path, maybe have become a nurse practitioner, been practicing clinically for a while, and have this inkling that maybe they want to go into leadership, would you encourage them to go back for a targeted master's or program where they are studying yeah. these?
You know, I think that warrants a really in-depth conversation with the individual to find out exactly what their experiences mm-hmm. are. Some advanced practice nurses are very clinically focused and are very strong providers. And by virtue of their role or the organization they work in, they don't get involved in the administrative or the leadership piece right. of where they work. Mm-hmm. Others go into the advanced practice role, serve as a provider, but they also take on extra responsibilities that have kind of a leadership flavor. They may be the lead nurse practitioner. There's different roles, you know, within the nurse practitioner mm-hmm. Profession right. that lends itself to different experiences. So I think sitting down with a nurse practitioner, for example, or a CRNA, because I've known CRNAs certainly who have gone into leadership, and have a conversation to kind of identify maybe the gaps that they might have as a result of the practice that they've had. Being a successful advanced practice nurse does not necessarily translate into a successful leadership role. And oftentimes in my conversations with nurses who have not gone the formal leadership route is they really don't understand what all is involved until you have those conversations. So I think, Tracy, the answer is, it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on the experience that the nurse has or hasn't had. And there are options, you know, even here at UAB School of Nursing, we have options for certificates in
yeah,
leadership.
I was going to ask that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so not everybody, again, it's not one path fits all. And we have options here to look at certificate programs that help fill in the gaps without having to go back for a full 2-year, 3-year master's program, et cetera. So I think it's a conversation that needs to be held.
You know, I think that's a good question that you asked, Tracy, because I do have friends that are nurse practitioners who took on that lead nurse practitioner role and eventually rose to like lead for the entire facility in terms of APPs. So that's a pathway for sure.
Yeah. Oh, it is. And there have been some great examples of leaders, you know, who are now in formal leadership who started out in an advanced practice role, nurse as a provider. And just as I, you know, have said a couple of times during this conversation, you know, I always went back to my staff nurse experience. So that nurse practitioner, that CRNA, they can go back to their staff nurse position. They can go back to the provider perspective. So they bring a lot of experience to the table that even I cannot, because I'm not a nurse practitioner. Mm-hmm. So I've had to learn that nurse practitioner role through others. And so certainly an advanced practice nurse who has an interest in leadership can be extremely successful in the role.
Yeah, so it's not impossible for us, Tracy. So how important is it to build strong professional, relationships?
So I've been in my role in the school as an associate professor for, this is starting my seventh year. And I think if you go back to any of my students, they're going to say, if he has said anything, he has said 1,000 times, it's all about relationships.
Yeah, you've told me that too.
I've told you that too, BJ. So, and it is true. I mean, my success has been through the success of others. And just as I said, I didn't go to engineering school. I didn't go to HR school. I didn't go to human resources. I didn't go to personnel. I didn't go to a lot of schools. But I've learned a lot through my relationships with those professionals in those roles. In trying to run a large hospital, it's complex. Everything comes to the CNO because a lot of times the engineers didn't go to nursing school. You know, HR didn't go to nursing school. But everything everybody does in an organization, whether it's administrative or clinical, funnels down to the patient. So and I use this example a lot, when engineering gets ready to shut off the medical gases for whatever reasons, I need them to like bring the chief nursing officer in so that patients continue to get the medical gases that they need on the other end. And we laugh. I only say that from experience of where that has not happened.
Wow.
And so, but I also talk about the relationships that I've built with these folks along the way. When I went into an organization at any level of leadership, my first goal was to build the relationships so that during a crisis or on a day-to-day basis even, I could pick up the phone, I could call engineering, I could call HR, I could call food and nutrition and say, hey, John, hey, Susie, I've got an issue, and get it resolved. I kind of sort of tell the truth when I say I never really put a work order in because I just picked up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in turn, okay, this is not a one-sided relationship. I had to be open to taking their calls when they got in a bind and they would call and say, hey, Greg, we need to do, and I'd say, okay, let's do this. So I will assure you that had I not developed strong relationships, and if leaders don't build strong relationships, things happen that you don't want to happen, and it funnels all the way down to the front lines.
I can imagine. You know, you mentioned earlier, and we all know that today's healthcare is extremely complex. We've come out of a rough patch with COVID and all that. I can't even imagine what CNOs were going through during that difficult time. But what do you think some of the most pressing issues are for CNOs? And how can you even prepare for those instances of things we might not even know are coming?
So, guys, I guess, you know, when I talk to CNOs today, when you ask them what are the pressing issues, we are still recovering from COVID. And staffing was probably the major challenge. Mm-hmm. I think we're in a recovery phase, and we're certainly far better than where we were. We're in a better situation now than we were in 20 and 21. But there's a recovery phase right now for staffing. And people are shifting from all of these creative staffing models that we had to go to bringing it back center. So I think staffing, if you ask us, our current CNO is going to be continued. There's still a lot of work to be done there. From a retired CNO perspective and seeing this from my experience in leadership as well as my experience in academia now, I think staff engagement is a real challenge. Mm-hmm. And trying to get staff all focused on the mission of the organization, getting them all focused on patient safety and all of those things that are so important for our patients. And I think that's even more challenging now that we have such a wide breadth of nurse experience out there. In many organizations, if not most organizations, we're working with staff across as many as five generations.
That's true.
And what drives and engages the new graduate today is very different than what drives people like me, a baby boomer, differently. Mm. And everything in between. And I know from my own experience as a CNO, that could be challenging, is how do I engage the new grad at 22, 23 years old? And how do I engage the boomer at 50, 55, 60 years old? Mm-hmm. So I think that whole engagement and generational work groups is a huge challenge. And then I think probably the last thing I would mention is succession planning. Mm-hmm. Because we do have this wide breadth of experience and ages out there, there's a large cadre of executive leaders now who are retirement eligible. Not gonna be retirement. They could retire today. And some 50 or 60% of CNOs across the country are retirement eligible. So if things ever settled down and they really thought about retirement, we could have a huge gap. So my question, you know, is, are we preparing for those who are going to follow us? And that can be a challenge, but it's also a wonderful opportunity. I know personally, both CNO roles that I had, I tried to be successful at planning and was very fortunate that my replacement, both of my replacements as I left those roles, were former nurse managers of mine who I knew had a lot of potential and they had the interest. So I groomed them for years so that when I stepped down from the position, I had someone to backfill the position. And it's been very successful because they're both in those CNO mm-hmm. roles today. But it took a lot of effort and thought about that. And I'm not sure that can happen every day.
Yeah. I think I remember you mentioning that, just being intentional with your succession plan, and you did that so well with identifying individuals that, you know, you could mentor and eventually, you know, for you fill your role. Just a few minutes ago, Tracy and I were busy nodding our heads with the comment that you made about, you know, having different generations of nursing staff. It's the same with us as educators, having different generations of students and how we engage with them. It's definitely a challenge. Just in about a minute or two, how were you successful in engaging some of those nurses when you were the CNO?
So I think for me, being accessible and visible mm-hmm. speaks across the generations. Now, I always tell you, the more seasoned nurse, those closer to my age, we're pretty independent. And we kind of, with the experience, can kind of do our thing, or at least we think we can. Okay? So maybe it wasn't so important for them. Interestingly, I found it very important for our younger, newer staff are they wanted to see, and they wanted to talk to the CNO. So being visible and accessible and willing to stop and just chat, you know, just let them have a sounding board. And so I did that a couple of ways. There was always the formal visibility through safety rounds and performance improvement rounds and all the formal leadership rounds. But the one that I personally benefited from, and feedback from staff indicated they did too, was when I just left my office and just randomly roamed around the building and stopped in the hallway and chat with my staff. Mm-hmm. And the information that I found was extremely important and insightful, because I was hearing frontline staff talk about this, whatever their issues were. And I could take that back and involve leadership in helping resolve them or not. So I think for me, BJ, I think working across the generations was just getting to know individuals, where they were, what they were, what their issues were, what their strengths were, what they needed from me. And, you know, after you build a reputation of being open, staff will tell you what they need and what they expect of you. And they're typically pretty open about where you may have let them down. And I was okay with that because I needed to hear that. I think that's probably the most important thing in terms of whether it's generational or whether it's just organizational culture is being out there.
Right. Yeah, I love that. We're about out of time. I always am truly surprised we're about out of time. I, like BJ, can tell that I'm sure you were an amazing CNO, and I am quite sure also that many nurses count themselves lucky to have worked with you. I wonder if you could just share with our listeners who might be interested in a career as a CNO, just one or two pearls as they're getting started on that.
So first of all, get engaged, okay? It is an intentional journey once you kind of think that's your path. And then get engaged and make yourself vulnerable. Again, get involved in task forces. Get involved in patient safety initiatives. Get involved in committees. Think about it. I guess secondly, and probably more important, is finding the right mentor and coach and making sure that you have someone with the experience at the level that you want to go to that helps groom you. And this is not about managing a position. It's about building on your behaviors and skills and understanding the implications of what you do is can be huge, because you're talking organizations. Yeah. So I think finding the right mentor and coach, building on the skills, and then getting the formal education through a master's program, through a doctoral program. And I, you know, of course, I have some prejudice in this, is that the leadership pathways that we have available to us through the NHSA program, through the Nurse Executive DNP program, are great examples of opportunities that we have as nurse leaders to really hone our skills as leaders. So I encourage everyone to really look at those and to have conversations with us. I talk to potential students probably weekly who are actually posing some of the questions that you pose. And I'm always open to sharing my own experience, but also giving them feedback along the way too.
Yeah, so we'll definitely add those links to those programs on our show notes. And Greg, thank you very much for joining us. Tracy and I definitely learned something new, and we hope our listeners did as well. And to all our listeners, thank you, and we hope you join us on our next episode of Clinical Pearls.